I'd like to read some verses from the Epistle of James, chapter 4. Verse 13. James chapter 4, 13. Go to now, ye that say today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil. Therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. That will be sufficient for our reading. Some weeks ago, I had a few meetings in Lurgan, and among the subjects that I spoke upon was, what is your life? For tonight I want to read the same verse and to think of the same verse, but I want us to think of slightly different. And I want to put alongside of that the other expression in our reading, if the Lord will. Two things that I want to get into our souls at the end of this another year. That is your life and the Lord's will. I put those two together. Two of the most important things that we can think about. We're on earth, and in the mercy of God, we're alive. Some of us didn't expect maybe to be spared as long as we are, but we're still here. And it's your life. I wonder why the Lord has us here. We were just as ready for heaven the moment we trusted Christ as we are now. Why not just land us safe when he had bought us and made it his own? Not a worry or care, but he left us here. And from the day we got saved, our life was divided in two parts. There were those years before it. Now you know we sing it. Hope you believe it. Oh, the years of sinning with it. You can't say much good about them. Those years are past. And then, says Paul, the life that I now live in the flesh, that's our present life. Now let us get a hold of that. That is from the day of conversion until tonight. That has been our life. Now it's called here your life. You needn't look for other people to control it or rule it. You needn't make up your mind, well, it's really not my responsibility. No, no. Every one of us has a life to live. And we need to think solemnly about that. Here I am alive tonight, at the end of 97. I wonder why I'm here. I want to stress as best I can tonight that the supreme purpose in life is for you and me to do the will of God. And get that well into mind. That sounds simple, but that's serious. It's to do the will of God. Though I love to turn, I suppose I maybe overdo it, but I do can't help but think of it. The greatest of all that we can think about along this line was the one who said, yes, though I come in the volume of the book it is written of me, to do thy will, O God. And he did it with delight. He did it with delight. The will of the Lord. If the Lord will. If the Lord will. And again, there are others that give us concern. And one of them is this, that we just get the one go at it. Many a man missed his examination, or a boy missed his examination. Now that men take exams, but the boys used to take exams and missed it. Like when he took it again and he got it. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you happen to miss the road in this life, now get a well in. you get no other opportunity. If you go astray in this time, you never get another go at it. And I can't say it as I'd like to, nor maybe I can't grasp it as I should. But what is over when your life is done is going to be settling your eternal glory. Can we get that hope tonight? We tell the poor sinner, mind you, and solemnly tell him, that the sins he commits on earth will determine the dreadfulness of his punishment and the light he'll have and so on. We add all those things together, the punishment that he will endure if he dies unsaved. And we could make sinners at times tremble about it. I wonder, could we make saints tremble as we think that my life lived now is going to determine my glory forever? Oh, so somebody thought I was going to happen on the work of grace. Now, there's not a doubt about that. You know I believe that as well as you. And we'll all reach the glory. And there'll be no exceptions whatever as to our redeemed bodies. They'll all be exactly complete and perfect as God would have them. And there are many things that will be common to all. But mind you, I still can see, I may be a wee bit dull, but I can see this much, that there will be degrees of honor awarded at the judgment seat of Christ. And I want to say to every heart tonight in this company, the will of God will have settled everything. Oh, says somebody, I wish I had been born to be a missionary. That may not have been the Lord's will. So what would you waste your breath going there for? Says somebody else, I wish I had been a maid to preacher, but I forget to be a preacher. And see the joy of winning souls for Christ and all that. We're not going to interfere with that at the moment. That's not the big question, dear friend, that I want us to think about. It's just the will of God, if the Lord will. And when he brought you into his kingdom, he had a purpose in heart in doing so. You see, our brother is showing us and was showing us how certain men had purpose of heart and God made them to prosper, and I was glad to hear the way he was working at it. I'm nearly afraid of him at times going too close. He might have taken my sermon from me, and I wouldn't be pleased with that. But he was coming close on it. You see, now you see, you want to be careful, dear brethren and sisters, and realize this, that the Lord expects us to be deeply thankful that we're here on earth. It annoys me a wee bit to hear Christians who sort of nearly wishing they were away. You know, the late Mr. Gilmer used to, now he would have teased you, you know, maybe you don't remember him, some of you younger ones don't know what I'm talking about, but the older ones know right well. He would talk about someone, now I'm using English, you don't know maybe too well, packing and grunting and getting on and always wanting to get away. No, dear soul, we're not taunting to get away. You see, why, I thought you'd been glad to get to heaven. Oh, that'll be all right. You see, we have an opportunity on earth we won't have in heaven. It's this life. I, the life I now live on the earth, says the apostle. The life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. Now, you would like me to tell you, I'm sure, a few thoughts from James, now from this epistle, that would help you to live a good life and a useful life. Now you say, that's not someone better. No, you should tell me. It's like telling a wee fella to grow, you know, you might as well tell him to fly, because he can't, a wee fella can't grow. But if you tell him how he could develop, that would be something to his good. And to merely tell Christians what they should do, well, you know, that really gets them nowhere. They have to be taught on how they can. Every man and woman in this company, we hope, really wants to live the next, if the Lord spares us into the next year, we would like to live it for the glory of God. We need help now to do that. Now, will you listen to James? Because after all, you know, his epistle's unique, and maybe we don't hear too much about it. I wrote a wee book on it one time, but on whether it's in existence, maybe some of you have read and some of you wouldn't waste your time. But at the same time, it was worth thinking about, and it did stir me up at that time. Now, what I do want us to get a hold of is this. One thing that helps you to make the best use of life is what is said of in this epistle, wisdom. Now he says, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Now, if there's one thing you need in life, dear child of God, and don't please think me unkind when I mention it, you need wisdom. Not ability to make proper decisions. And that enablement that God imparts that can develop as time goes on a wisdom that is certainly profitable and for God's glory. Now look to yourself. Don't you think me unkind if I tell you that some of the world's people make fools of themselves. And you could see them sit down at times near the end of a life and say, I've been a fool. I didn't act the way I should. Oh, if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God. Hope you're asking God for to make you wise, dear brother. Dear young child of God, do that not so many young folk here tonight, but if there be any young folk, dear young child of God, get you this into your mind. God can impart wisdom. Oh, but so somebody, our family's all very sensible, and we're all very wise. We're not the silly billies that run about the country. We've been brought up very thoughtfully and very wise and shrewd and very careful. Now, look, dear soul, don't you mix up me or not your wisdom with spiritual wisdom. But you know, in the estimation of most people, Paul was the biggest fool the world ever saw. Maybe you don't believe that. He threw away his life, you'd say. He was throwing away his abilities. He could have been a giant in the world's estimation. What did he do? Put that on the altar for God and suffered hardship that none of us has endured. And he was the wisest man that then was about. You see, divine wisdom doesn't always tally with earthly wisdom. And earthly shrewdness and so on. And earthly craft. That's not divine wisdom. Wisdom is from above. And it's pure and it's holy. And it's God given. And he can grant it. He can grant it to every child of his. The second thing in this epistle that would help a man to in his difficulties in this, that is of course what you've already been hearing, prayer. Now you know that James has a good deal to say about prayer. And of course he finishes up his epistle by reference to a man of prayer in the old economy, a man that called Elijah. And secondly, Elijah, he was prepared to cry to God and put God to a test and to actually and deliberately come into God's presence for special requests on special occasions. Now every Christian prays. Now will you listen to this? We all pray. Don't tell me you're saved if you don't. Maybe I'm a wee bit too tough, but I don't talk to me like I have no time for those people. But I want us to think that there comes junctures in life arranged by the Almighty when we can prove God in a real sense, in earnest, humble prayer. Now you bring those occasions into your life, dear brother. And you'll be able to put your finger on and there was a time when I was in great difficulties and the living God answered my prayer. Mind you, it's great to have that. I don't know, I may be a wee bit excited at times, but I would love to get into people's minds and into their hearts an ambition to have experience with the Almighty. Not just merely reading about God and reading about Christ and singing the hymns and so on, not just that, but to have an intimate knowledge of the Almighty and see his mighty hand in your life, in particular little points maybe that others know nothing about. Don't you worry about the public. And you'll be able then to sing with a wee bit more reality. There no stranger God shall meet me. Stranger thou in courts above. He who to his rest shall greet me with a well-known love. Mind you, dear soul, it's great to have proved the Almighty in blessed Christian experience. I hope we know more about that as this year begins in the will of God in a few hours. More of God's mighty power of proving God in maybe difficult conditions. And of course that just gets me to the next big theme that's in James that would help us to know how to live this life and would make this life profitable for ourselves and for others, and that would be the fact that we put confidence in God. It's faith. Now you all know that James is the great epistle that deals with faith. I think we pointed that out again and again. John emphasizes love, and you have the idea of hope perhaps prominent in Peter's writing. But when James is writing, the one thing he emphasizes in nearly all the chapters, and that is this faith and its effectiveness and its reality, a confidence in the living God. You see, I've already quoted the verse. I'm sure you're tired of me quoting it. You see, the life I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. You see, we began life worth living the moment we exercised faith in Christ. And every step we take on that journey from that day until we reach the glory should be a step in confidence and simple dependence upon God. Now, there's a tendency with us all. Now, you maybe don't cross my path, tell you things that maybe you don't like to hear. But there is a tendency with us all to try and plan out everything for ourselves. And we'd nearly think that we had as much knowledge and wisdom and could conceive everything and could nearly accomplish nearly anything. And some men do accomplish a lot with their crafty schemes and so on. But you see, the child of God doesn't live like that. He lives depending upon his God and having experience with his God. And as he lives in dependence upon him, he counts upon him to help him. Now, that's it. Now, you need God in your private life. And if you happen to have a home, you need God's help in that home life. Don't be thinking it can be done with mere determination. And if you do a little in the public service for God, I tell you, you will feel your need of God. I think my brother that has spoken would agree to that. And no matter how long you preach or how well you preach, you know, sometimes preachers do think they have handled fairly well. And no matter how many attend your meetings, mind you, when it's all done, it's God that saves. And we've all been made to feel it. Many a time you get great meetings, you'd say, and you'd have thought, sure, a lot number of people would be saved, and there wasn't a move. Sometimes they were sparse enough, and maybe not too many coming, and yet God began to work. Like, you can't explain these things. But dependence upon the Almighty. And I would say to those who take a care for the saints, and I appeal for them. Remember, you need more than just your diligence. Now, we're glad to see you diligent. And more than your attention, you need the living God to help you. And to preserve the flock. And to keep the sheep. For he is the great shepherd of his people. We feel more of this as the days go by. And we don't again get excited about things that maybe excite others. Because we still believe there's a God in heaven. We don't get excited. But we cleave to him and leave the matters in his hand and count upon him for his delivering grace. Then again, there's another subject here I could have taken up, but I'm not doing it. And that is the return of the Lord. You see, the child of God that's going to live a life that I not regret, he has to keep in mind my Lord's coming. And he's bringing his reward with him. And time is short. It may not be that it'll be a question of how long I live or how this little body will wear out or anything like that. It may be that the Lord will come. So that in light of the Lord's coming, he realizes I can't waste my lifetime because I haven't very long. He'll soon be here. You all know right well the man that was so abusive to his fellow servants was the man who says, my Lord delayeth his coming. He wasn't looking for the Lord to come quickly. He had forgotten all about it, as it were. And then he could act as he liked. But a consciousness of the Lord's coming. I should maybe stop a second. I would say there's a slight change has come over public ministry since I got saved. You think now I'm wee bit critical about that. I would say there was more stress on the Lord's coming in public ministry when I got saved than there is today. And yet we never were near it. Could be very close on it. Now, I'm not a prophet, as you know, and I wouldn't want to be silly. But maybe you watch those thousands. And the year 2000 could make big changes. You watch the way God has wrought in the past. Aye. Some of you boys with cleverness, you'll tell us, yes, there's so many 4,000 in the Old Testament. You can think of things. dear wee bit of thinking now. We're not putting any dates on it, but mind you could be in a very critical moment. We're coming near the year 2000. It could well be that God's program will come into fruition just at that time. We don't know. We're not saying it will. Of course, we're thinking about it. And if we were sure the Lord was coming, what a change it would make. And how we'd adjust the last few hours of our time on earth and spend them for the glory of God. The Lord's coming, kept in his breast and kept in the soul, makes life more profitable and more useful. Now, before I leave that, I want to have one another subject in a moment or two. And before I leave that, I want to think of another matter that's given me great concern. You know, sometimes I sit down and I think of those that once were very prosperous and very doing well as Christians. I'm sorry to tell you that tonight they're not doing well. There are not many, but some. Not every child of God, you know, that goes on steady. Not every child of God keeps his head and keeps level. Oh, you could say, I know what went wrong with him, and I know what went wrong with her, and I know this, and I know that. Now, you could do all that. But what should give us a great concern is this. The many of God's people that have a gap in their life, and years would like to forget about. God, in grace now, we praise his name. He restores his people. And we've seen happy souls brought back to the Lord, and we're delighted with this. We would love to see more of it. You hear sometimes in these gospel meetings, I noticed we were reading about a man today, and he was telling about not only seeing souls saved, but seeing saints restored. And sometimes that would be a good work. If you could see that in a series of meetings, you'd be done fairly well. Getting people back on their feet again. They really saved people, but they had the strength and they'd gone astray. What we'd love to warn us all about, and we need to think of it seriously, it'd be a terrible business if at the end of days we had to look back on his face. Say those are the years we missed. Those years were lost. Those years were a failure. We'd have to look at how grave that a situation could be. And that will maybe allow me to turn to my second thought. And that is, if the Lord will. If the Lord will. The Apostle Paul, as you know, was only saved when he cried out, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? And he didn't cry that in vain. Because the Lord says to him, now you just go into the place and you'll meet the man that will tell you exactly what you're to do. And as soon as he had met him, the first thing nearly that he told him to do was this, look, see your eyes and get baptized. That's what any preacher would do with any convert that's really saved. You say, but now wait a minute, the will of God now. Aye, the will of God. No question about that. You see, Paul wasn't asked to do something that was doubtful. He was asked to do something that was definitely in accordance with the will of God. So that every child of God since then, who has read his New Testament, he has really and sincerely learned the simple truth of baptism, and he has obeyed the Lord in that. And it's the Lord's will not only that we should be baptized, but that we should remember him. Now those are basics. There are a number of things in your Bible now, look, that you don't need to be a great scholar to learn, or you don't need to be anything important. I learned them as a schoolboy, and you could easily learn them with your intelligence far ahead of mine. You could easily learn them and have no trouble at all. But then you see we come to another side of things that's maybe a wee bit more complicated for some of you. The Lord's will. I'd love to help you in that. Well, but so somebody, you're going to start now and talk about guidance. Now, I just didn't say that. I didn't say that. But now, you know right well that the supreme, didn't we start with this? The supreme purpose of your life is to fulfill the will of God. Now, that's the will of God for you. Just for you. You see, there's a general will of God now for all the Lord's people. No matter where you meet a Christian, you can say, now, that's the will of God for you, and such as baptism and remembering the Lord and assembly testimony and so on. We could go over that. And that's the will of God for all God's people. But now we want to get down to this. And this is the bit that needs to give us exercise before God. His will for me. What do you want me to do? Now, the first thing I want to say to help you now, dear child of God, is this. Don't waste your time. This is strong language, but it's true language. Don't waste your time pining away, imagining that you're not what you were meant to be or where you ought to be. You're only wasting your breath. Don't waste your breath that way. Quite a lot of people are very, very unhappy where they are. Will you listen to your Bible? That every man wherein he is called, therein abide with God. You don't need guidance to stay where you are. You only need guidance when you're going to make a change. Can you follow that there? Get that well into your mind, because there's an unrest can get into people. And they get very jealous of others and they say, I should be preaching, I should be in the Free State, and I should be in Africa, or I should be in China, or I should be this here or that and that. And they're all living as if, like, I missed the road, I should have been. Look, dear, so don't waste your breath like that. God put you in the north of Ireland. And he put you maybe in the city of Belfast or in the surroundings, or wherever you live. I don't know where you live. And he put, I don't know where you all live, I mean, but he put you there. Be content there. And say, well, I'm where God has me. And his will be done. And I'll try and do what I am. He's put me here, and he saved me here, and therefore I'm going to stay here to move me. Second thing I would like to stress, for I think this would help you, is this. Well, it's not clever, it's a bit hard to see, but I'll do my best. A second thing that he would want us to do is this. He would want us to think about, quite often, the Lord's will in any man's life is very different to what he imagined it would be. As sure as you sit down making your plans, you'll find they're very often thwarted. And we don't like me saying that. You see, if I would tell you, man, if I ever tell my life story, there'd be a great lot of boys lift their brows. They would love to hear, but they don't hear much of me. If I could tell you what I was intending to be, and the training that I got for it, the advancements that I made on it, the whole thing just blew up like a bomb. I'll put it one way, and let me tell you this wee secret. It came the night last night that I took an examination, and I went down to my bedroom to pray. This might help somebody. And I asked the Lord to help me through this operation. And when I was on my knees, those words came to me. Now, I know that I didn't understand them right at the time, but what have I to do any more with idols? And before I was off my knees, I told the Lord, that's the last exam I'll take. My sister. That's me finished. Education had become an idol to me. And learning had become something. The drawing board and the instruments and so on had become more to me than spiritual things. And I said, that's all. That's all. So that just was looked upon as an ordinary tisman from that on, not the end of that. And that humbles us. So somebody, you must have been tempted to preach in that a bit of me. Oh no, I says never again. That's one thing I'll not be at. As sure as I'm alive, I'll try and keep away from that. Let me sweep the floor of the wee hall. Let me light the fire and light the lamps. You wouldn't know what I'm talking about. Let me do a wee bit of weeding round the hall. Let me do a wee turn or two, paint the door or something like that. I was quite happy with that. That would do me all right. And another thing, I didn't want to leave home. As a homer, I think I'm still not. But I was a homer. I didn't want to leave home. And I knew a preacher, if you went to preach, you'd have to leave home. I couldn't tell you a whole lot of stories. But and before I give him a call, that was a nice big fellow's call, but I never could talk along those lines. All I want to get around to is this. This is all I told you that for now. I didn't want to talk about myself. But I did want to tell you this, my brother. As sure as you make plans, it's likely the Lord will cross them. So that you have to say, now, maybe it's not easy singing it. I know it's easy singing it, but not easy practicing it. I bring me to thy will, O God, and all thy wills adore, and every day I live I seek to please thee more and more. Now you say, you haven't answered my difficulties yet, for I sometimes hardly know what way I'm doing. Look, get off whatever the Lord wants you to do. Get it done. Just wherever you are. But your hand failed it today. You don't reach too far with your hand. You see a lot further with your eyes than your hand would go. It's just wherever your hand will take you. Anything around about you, some people never can see any need at home, you know. That little meeting you're in would need maybe more help than you think. And those dear saints would need a bit of help. And God will have you develop whatever gift you have just in your own little quarter. Never get excited about distant places or anything like that. And you say, how then, sir, will God get missionaries if everybody did what you say they'd all be sitting at home? Not at all. If you what God wants them to do at home, very often he'd open up the way for other things. Do you follow or not? Well, keep doing it what you're at. Whatever you can do, just do it. And then you say, well, if the Lord has me here, I'll use what little energy I have and whatever little ability he gives me. I'll be thankful for it, and I'll use it for his glory, and I'll leave the issues with him. Then, quite often, God overrules in his own mysterious way, in a miraculous way, perhaps, and in some way you'd never think of, and he can direct you into further service, but do the wee bit that he has given you to do at the start, and do it where you are, and then the way will open up. Now, you say, would I need to get a text for it? I'm not too happy about all these text men. No, I've got text myself when I was a young Christian. I remember I was going to ask a raise. And I read those words, be content with your wages. So, you didn't know that was in the Bible. And I took a notion one time I'd leave my job and take another one. He says, if the spirit of the ruler raised up against thee, leave not thy place. So that was fairly plain, wasn't it? Didn't need much games after that. And I could go through other things like that, that the Lord can direct. Now, that is true. He does that. Would I need to get a text for it? I'm not too happy about all these text men. No, I've got text myself when I was a young Christian. I remember I was going to ask a raise. And I read those words, be content with your wages. So, you didn't know that was in the Bible. And I took a notion one time I'd leave my job and take another one. He says, if the spirit of the ruler raised up against thee, leave not thy place. So that was fairly plain, wasn't it? Didn't need much games after that. And I could go through other things like that, that the Lord can direct. Now that is true. He does that especially with young believers. Now he helps us when we're young and we, yes. But maybe he expects another thing, brother. And I'm going to go to the line of things you don't hear much mentioned. He expects you to develop in your spiritual apprehension and in your spiritual development so that you can detect his leading and see the way opening and that you have the spiritual grasp of his mind and that you bear to it. I'll use an illustration that'll help you now. It's a childish one, but it'll do. A mother said a wee girl of two. Now she takes it by the hand. And maybe when it's four or five, she'll say, now you just go in front of me, but don't go too far away. And maybe when it's 10 or 12, now you can go a bit further because you're a bit bigger. And maybe when it's 18 or 19, now just a good dozen of them where to go. They'll just go their own way. They'll do whatever they like. But I'm talking about ordinary people before this modern idea got into their head that everybody knows everything in their teens. That idea wasn't always in existence. You see, now what I'm trying to illustrate is this, that you get confident that you can take decisions and make decisions on your own because you've developed in your understanding. Now, in spiritual understanding, God gives you that ability, imparted as the years go by. So they just don't need to give you a text to get you guided. You can understand what would be his will, and you say, I bear to it. Now, I should have said this. I'm still 3 minutes in my watches, right? Still 3 minutes, for these men are very exact here. And I mentioned this, and then I sit down. And that is this. I don't think that I could tell any child of God that he fulfilled God's will in his life without emphasizing to him it's likely to be God's life. I'm giving you time to think about that. There's one sitting at God's right hand, and he did the will of God, and he did it with all his heart. And he's never told any of us yet, nor never will, how much it cost him to do it. We'd have to measure the depths of Calvary to grasp that. Cost him all that he had to fulfill the will of God. And then lastly, I want to say this. Wouldn't it be nice if not only 97 came to an end, but our little journey was over and our day on earth is finished. Wouldn't it be nice that each could say, I finished my course. I've done what the Lord meant me to do. I didn't go to Africa. I didn't make a big shout. I didn't do this, that, or the other. That's all right. Don't worry about that. I just did what the Lord meant me to do. And was the Lord's will. And I'm thankful that I fulfilled it by His grace. May the Lord bless this meditation to your hearts.